Hello, my name is Layla Ilaraza. I'm a student project manager at the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues at Dickinson College. Today, I am joined by Dr. Martin E.P. Seligman, who is the Zellerbach Family Professor of Psychology and Director of the Positive Psychology Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Seligman is visiting Dickinson to receive the 72nd Annual Priestley Award Lecture on Wednesday, April 3rd. The Priestley Award is presented by Dickinson College in memory of Joseph Priestley, discoverer of oxygen, to a distinguished scientist whose work has contributed to the welfare of humanity. Dr. Seligman, thank you for joining me. I have the privilege of reading your book, Flourish, and in it you mention one of the goals of positive psychology is to increase flourishing, which can be measured through well-being. For those listeners who are not familiar with positive psychology, how would you explain it, and how is it connected to well-being and flourishing?
Psychology historically has investigated what cripples life, what's wrong. Positive psychology is the reverse. It asks what enhances life. How can one have positive emotion, engagement, good relationships, meaning, and achievement in life? So it's like positive psychology is about understanding and building the enhancers of the good life.
And in Flourish, you also mentioned that you, quote, detest the word happiness and call it a monism. Would you be able to elaborate on that for our audience?
Well, the word happiness is means so many different things to different people and in different languages. So to do science on the notion, we've had to decompose it. And for me, happiness decomposes to PERMA, where P is positive emotion, subjective well-being, the feeling of happiness. E is engagement, being one with the music, being centered. R is good relationships. M is meaning and mattering in life. And A is accomplishment in life. So a better question than what is happiness and how do we build it is to decompose it and ask what is PERMA and how do we build those different pillars of happiness.
And now going more into a question about education, you talk about the idea of positive education, which is a blending of formal academic education with positive psychology concepts that promote well-being in children. For instance, to promote well-being, you discuss the benefit of energy breaks in the classroom. What other exercises or strategies of positive education can be beneficial in a classroom or workplace setting?
Well, first an exercise to define positive education. So if I ask you, Layla, what does Dickinson teach? You would say things like literacy, numeracy, how to get a good job, conformity, and the like. And then if I ask you, what do you want most in life? You would say something like fulfillment, happiness, well-being. And it's very interesting, these two lists don't overlap. So positive education is the notion that we can both at the school and university level teach the traditional stuff, literacy, numeracy, history, and we can teach how to have a good life. Now, there are lots of ways of doing that, and much better than energy breaks, but whenever I find myself teaching at 4 PM, I always have energy breaks because that's the low point of the basic rest and activity human cycle. But there are about a dozen different exercises when I teach positive psychology that one can do to teach people about more well-being. So using your signature strengths at school, at nighttime, going over the good things that happened today, learning how to praise people appropriately, learning active constructive responding when someone you love comes to you with a victory, are just some examples of it. But over the last 30 years, we've learned quite a few ways of not only teaching the intellectual material of positive psychology, but of doing interventions that make people happier.
You mentioned signature strengths. Could you talk a little bit about that for those listening who might not know what that is?
Signature strengths is the opposite of the diagnostic and statistical manual of insanity. What are the different insanities? So we took to ask the question, what are the different sanities that are that every culture, every religion across history values? And we think there are 24 human strengths that are valued. Things like temperance, bravery, wisdom, and the like. And so I have a website that's free that millions of people have gone to, and you can take a signature strengths test. The website is authentichappinessoneword.org, and the test, which at least 5 million people have taken, tells you what your 5 highest strengths are, and then there are exercises for using them more at work, at school, and with people you love. And it turns out using your signature strengths more produces more life satisfaction, and it fights depression and anxiety.
On to similar vein with assessment, the measurement of well-being, or more broadly, life satisfaction, focuses on self-assessment. How do personal biases or even mental health impact the reliability of self-assessment, if at all?
That's a very technical question. So the entire field of psychometrics has to do with correcting for biases and trying to get at things that are more objective. And it's a reasonably successful field. But anytime you're dealing with a self-report questionnaire, people are doing reputation management. So you have to make it anonymous and not read by others and the like. But reputation management is a pervasive part of human interaction, and it does pervade the self-report field. So correcting for bias is a whole scientific field.
I worked with the U.S. Army to implement positive psychology teachings in training. Could you elaborate a little bit on the history of that and where that is currently?
Yeah, so 15 years ago, the Chief of Staff of the United States Army came to me and asked if we could train 40,000 drill sergeants to teach positive psychology and resilience to the entire United States Army, which we did. And now learning about positive psychology and resilience is a regulation in the Army. So when you enter the Army on the first day, you take a questionnaire that I devised about psychological fitness. And throughout Army training, you have a program called Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness, which is essentially a well-being and resilience program. So it's a regulation program in the Army.
More specifically, what are some well-being practices that anyone, especially college students, can implement in their everyday lives?
Well, the easiest thing to do that's surefire is if you're reading or listening to this interview now, you should shut it off, go out, find someone who needs help, and help them. So that's one surefire. We're wired to feel good when we help others. And when you come back, turn it back on.
As technology advances, the abilities of artificial intelligence, there are opportunities to expand the accessibility of positive psychology and its dissemination. A few other project managers and I actually used the Ask Martin virtual therapist. We gave a brief prompt. And for those listening, could you explain what your chatbot is and how it came to be?
Well, it's not mine. It was invented in China. And I have no financial interest in it, but I have a legacy interest in it. It was invented in China because there aren't enough coaches and therapists to go around. So they fed ChatGPT-4 a lot of my books and speeches. And they created essentially a virtual Seligman, and they asked me to try it out. And now I've done it with at least 300 times with people around the world, and it's a better therapist and coach than I am. And I'm awed by AI at this point. I know there are a lot of doomsayers about AI, but I think we're encountering a phase transition in human intelligence by partnering with this new alien intelligence. And I think the future of coaching and therapy, in which we braid our human talents with this remarkable new discovery, will produce therapy and coaching that's much more effective than what we have now. So in many ways, for a psychologist, this is the single most exciting period in the last 100 years in psychology because of this remarkable new technology.
You've mentioned the benefits of incorporating positive psychology with AI. Can you see any potential drawbacks?
Well, I'm very familiar with my doomsayer friends about AI, that it hallucinates, it makes things up, it suggests that you should commit suicide, and things like that. So I've been monitoring Ask Martin very carefully for a year now. It hallucinates nothing. I have yet to see a hallucination. It's completely accurate, doesn't make things up. It remembers the literature much better than I do. I consult it to find out stuff I've forgotten. And the advice it gives is just remarkably good. So when new technologies have been introduced, the doomsayers come out in force about why should we fly if God has given us the railroads, is kind of the Luddite and doomsayers say. And I think the potential good here of AI overwhelmingly greater than the potential bad. And the history of technology has been, we envision all these bad things that might happen and we start correcting for them. So I think AI, at least for the next 20 years or so, is a huge boon to the human species, equivalent roughly to electricity. It's Promethean.
And I have one more question. There's a growing mental health crisis on college campuses. Are there any potential limits to positive psychology, especially among college students?
Well, I've thought long and hard about this, and I'm alarmed because there is a growing mental health issue in this generation of students. I'll just say one thing about it. So I'm interested in the size of the I and the we. Your great-grandparents, when they failed in life, and failure is a routine part of life, had very lush spiritual furniture to sit in that consoled them from failure. They believed in God. They believed in the family. They had large families. They believed in the community. They were patriotic. They had lots of friends in the flesh. They had a small I and a big we. And one of the alarming things about this generation is that when you fail, the spiritual furniture this generation has to sit in is threadbare. We don't believe in God. We're not patriotic. We're not part of a community. We don't have small families. And we don't have a lot of real friends. So I think this generation is maybe suffering from a very big I in which I'm all there is. And if I fail, that's hugely catastrophic. Whereas since failure is one's lot in life, one needs rich spiritual buffering furniture. And that's one of the things that's absent.
This concludes our interview. On behalf of the Clark Forum, thank you again for sitting down and having this conversation with me. If you are interested in hearing Professor Seligman's full talk, you can check out our website at clarkforum.org.